If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tastesofchicago.com to order today.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. By the way, we asked you earlier on the show to tell us not how much you're tipping, but how much you're getting if you are a tipped or sometimes gifted employee. John, I'm a mail carrier in the suburbs, and I receive everything from cash and gift cards to homemade goodies and chocolates. I very much appreciate it all. P.S. The Postal Service, I'm a mail carrier, officially says we are not allowed to take gifts, but we absolutely will, and it will just be our little secret. And one more note here. John, funny nurse story. Some of you try to give tips, but one nurse called in and said, there's no way nurses are supposed to take tips. John, I was working as a nurse. I was discharging a patient to their car, and on the way, they tried to slip some cash into my warm-up jacket pocket as they were getting into the car, so I quickly threw the cash back into their car. I got back to my department and realized I also gave them my lunch money. Terry Savage joins us now, the money lady. Hi, Terry.
I'm not only laughing at that, but I'm laughing at myself because I was sitting here when you said, oh, and it's Wednesday and it's Terry Savage. We'll talk about this and this. And some of you want to talk about tips. So I quick on my computer, I'm going to have to explain very simply, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, which are known as TIPS.
Oh, which is not the TIPS I'm talking about.
Which has absolutely, just shows you where my brain goes, just has absolutely nothing to do with what you were obviously talking about, a gift for people that you want to recognize. So I'm just sitting here giggling about that.
Nice to hear your voice today. This is Terry, the syndicated financial columnist, terrysavage.com. You read and see her everywhere. She is the money lady. Boy, I'll tell you what, everybody is talking about the shooting of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, and I know that it has to do, the conversation that has ensued has been about the cost of healthcare and insurance companies that are, by many people's standards, just too stingy or hard to work with. And you and I have talked many times about that sort of managed healthcare. I don't know if you have some sort of overriding thoughts about that arena.
Well, this is tricky, but the minute that happened, I mean like 3 minutes later before we knew anything except that it was the CEO of UnitedHealthcare who was shot, I texted Pete Zimmerman, our wonderful producer, and I said, bet you there's going to be some connection with a Medicare Managed Care Advantage program. Well, we didn't know who it was then, but where this person's spouse was denied care or a test and so forth. So wrong about that, but still strange about who this fellow is. But the rage that it elicited at what we will call managed care. You know, I've been talking about the choice between original Medicare and Advantage plans, which cost less. You can go at terrysavage.com and in the columns section, just search Medicare Advantage. And you'll see for 3 years, I've been trying to explain that they get a reimbursement, a fixed reimbursement from the government, and they're public companies, and the profit they make is the difference between what they're getting from the government and what they spend on your health care, and that when you're in Advantage, it works fine if you're well, but if you want tests or seeing specialists and so forth, you either go out of network and pay more, or you face denial. So we've talked about that, John, for 3 years. UnitedHealthcare also manages care for other insurance programs. Now, let me just go on for a minute and say something. You know, that's why I've always said just stick with original Medicare. If your doctor recommends a test, you'll get it. You get your choice of doctors and hospitals. So people are outraged that managed care now happening with artificial intelligence for many of these companies is restricting care in many ways. But I will tell you what the alternative is, because if you have had any experience with healthcare in the UK or Canada, the alternative to having either a bureaucrat or a managed care employee or artificial intelligence deciding whether you really do need an MRI right now, even though your doctor says so, the alternative is you wait and you wait. And unless you are literally at death's door, You don't get care in Canada. And I have many friends in Canada, and they fortunately happen to be financially able to come down to the United States to get MRIs or x-rays. One friend's husband came back to the United States because he couldn't get a port for his chemotherapy put in for 6 weeks, so they were going to have to delay the start of his chemo. So lines and waiting are the alternative,
yeah,
perhaps, to rationing in the sense that managed care does.
I don't think that point gets made often enough, because we have statistics like 29 industrialized nations, only one doesn't have government-sponsored health care, and it's the United States. You know, everybody else seems to have figured it out but us. And I think there's some truth to that. But the waiting time that people face in other countries is something that is not as problematic here as it is elsewhere. And I'm not saying that you get in right away. You still wait 6 months sometimes to see a doctor. But I've heard the versions of that story you're telling, too.
We have not solved the problem that our health care, though expensive, does amazing things. But how we deliver it and how we pay for it is, I mean, I'm not saying that I have the answer. But right now, Medicare, traditional Medicare, is the one place where you could say, ouch, and go get a call and pretty much get in to see the doctor of your choice,
yeah,
pretty soon. And not pay for it.
I wonder if they have in those other countries, do you know, Canada and, say, England or Europe, those urgent care places where you just zoom in and they see you right now or within a half an hour?
They have urgent care, but there are lines there, too.
Yeah. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Terry Savage, the money lady, is here. Anything else you want to say before I start firing questions at you?
Let's do questions. I always love that part of it.
Well, you like this. Terry Savage is one of the few money managers I listen to and trust. She is the best above all others. All right. So if health care and...
Let's set it straight.
You're going to say. You're not a money manager.
I don't manage anyone's money.
I know.
Only my own. And I tell you what I do, which is believe in the future and have some chicken money on the side. That's my single principle. You don't have to beat the market. All you have to do is be the market and sell down to the sleeping point so you can ride it out for the long run. I manage no one's money. I don't give stock advice.
So if healthcare, Terry, in Canada or the UK is so bad, why don't we see reports on TV where people want to change how their whole system works? Actually, I've been over there a couple times in the last year, and Steve Bertrand goes there every year, and people in England do talk about how they have a healthcare crisis over there, and part of it is keeping doctors in the system.
Absolutely. Part of it is keeping doctors in the system. But if you just take a look, for example, in Buffalo, New York, which is only, an hour and a half drive from Toronto, maybe not even that long. There is a huge network of clinics for everything from ophthalmology to urology. Get your MRI. When you might have to wait 2 months for an MRI in Toronto, people who of means just drive across the border and have an MRI and drive home that same day. So I know that for a fact. So people get, it's like you boil the lobster, you turn up the water and it dies slowly, or do you plunge it into boiling water? We're sort of being plunged into a boiling water awareness of the limitations of managed care in the United States. But if you've gotten used to it, people just resign themselves. Well, yeah, gosh, I need a hip operation. I won't get that until next March, and they're kind of resigned to it. Now, if you are having a heart attack, they'll take you right in the emergency room, no question about that. But to go see a cardiologist, you might have to get in line and wait.
What about RMDs on inherited IRAs?
Oh, boy, this is such a complex question. In the olden days, about 5 years ago, you would want to name someone younger, not too much younger, but anyway, as the beneficiary of your IRA, because in the olden days, you could roll it over, that beneficiary, no matter who it was, could roll it over into his or her IRA and let it keep growing until they got to their required beginning date, which in those days was 70 and a half. Now, you don't have to take required distributions until the year you turn 73. However, if you inherit an IRA, the rules are very complex. There are some rules for spouses There are different rules if it's a non-spousal beneficiary. There are different rules if the person who died had already begun taking RMDs.
Yeah.
I've written about that. Actually, at our Friends Talk Money podcast, there's a link to a wonderful podcast we did with Ed Slott, who's the guru of how to take distributions depending on who the beneficiary is. But to you don't have to be an expert in that. Believe me, it makes my mind swim, and I won't get into the details. But you want to ask your custodian, Fidelity or Vanguard. Because if you're a spouse, for example, you can leave it as an inherited IRA or roll it into your own. There are iterations between iterations. So my best advice is if you inherit an IRA, you contact the custodian. They're the experts and say, what are my choices? Yeah. Do I roll it into my own inherited IRA? Most people are going to have to take the money out within 10 years.
Well, what about this? Someone said, can I take my IRA RMD, required minimum distribution?
All right. This is different than an inherence. Now, we're talking about separate things.
Can I take my IRA RMD, and can I put it into a Roth IRA?
Only if you have earned income. You can contribute to a Roth based on your earned income in that year.
I assume
and
this
person
has that.
You can use the money from anywhere. You can dig it out from under your couch, or you can have saved it from your paycheck, from your job, or if you were required to take a withdrawal from something else. If you're still earning income and you meet the income qualifications, I'd have to look those up for
Terry, I'm going to ask you this next question, and you'll have to answer it maybe on the other side, but give me your ballpark answer. Terry, we need to buy a car. When we come back from Florida in the spring this year, Florida listeners coming back to Chicagoland, will the proposed tariffs on imports raise the price of a Toyota or Honda made in the USA? Should I buy the car before January 20th?
Wow. Let me look at my crystal ball, and I'll come back to you on the other side of the commercial break.
Yeah. And I'll also mention this. Tom Appel, the consumer car guide guy, was on with us and had this question posed to him as well. Terry, before the break, somebody said, should they buy a Toyota or Honda before the tariffs go into place?
Well, probably that Toyota or Honda is assembled at the very least in the United States. It was very interesting. A huge portion of our car parts are imported from Canada. And we're not talking about just the fact that a car itself might be imported and subject to a significant tariff, but the parts, now that this whole tariff idea has extended to Canada and Mexico, where many cars are assembled, there's a lot of uncertainty about that. And there's been reports that even if it was a U.S.-made car, the increase in tariffs on those imported parts could add over $2,000 to the cost of a car. So there's this sense of, okay, go get it. Look, you don't have to wait until the tariffs do go into effect. If they do, the minute they go into effect, they will impact the cars that are already here, even though those were made before with parts brought in before the tariff happened. So I would say that
the price of those cars will go up.
Those will go up to the ones on the lot. So we're at an interesting juncture. Remember, a couple of years ago, you couldn't get a car. It was the shortages in the supply chain. We have higher inventories now. Traditionally, the last 2 weeks of the year, it's hard to believe we're at the last 2 weeks of the year, but those are a great time to make a deal. Dealers just want them off the lot. You are the first people to think about, not the first people, I should say, to think about the fact that costs could go up next year. So if you really want a car, I would say if you can make a good deal right now, this would be the time to buy it. However, let's just take a look a little further down the road than, quote, next year. If we have high tariffs on everything, it's going to raise prices for everything, whether you make your washing machine or automobile in the U.S., higher import prices give domestic producers a chance to raise their prices. It could lead to an economic slowdown that somewhere down the road toward the end of next year, you can check me on this if we're around at the end of next year, could lead to some kind of economic slowdown recession that if you waited maybe 9 or 10 months or a year, could give you a better chance to buy at a bargain price if these tariffs and maybe some of the immigration policies lead to a shortage of workers and an economic slowdown. Maybe you'll get another shot at buying cars cheaply in a year.
Tom Appel was on our show last week and asked about this. He wondered out loud if this wasn't more of a bargaining chip than a reality, that it would be a lot of the things you just suggested, and those aren't good. And so he wonders if this is not bluster. I use that word sometimes, but this is what the incoming administration is saying, and they're trying to get concessions from companies and countries. To some degree, that's even working, but will we really see a 60% tax on stuff coming from China? He didn't think so.
No, and I don't think so either. But what it does add into the mix is uncertainty. And it will add uncertainty to dealers inventorying more cars on their lots. So right now, we're at a kind of an interesting moment where inventories, I just looked up the St. Louis Fed's chart on dealer inventories. It's substantially higher than it was at the end of 2022, just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, if you know you're going to get a car, why don't you just try and go ahead and make your best deal for it before the end of the year?
Terry, when my son lost his job this summer, I helped him with his bills to the tune of $20,000. Can this be considered a gift for tax purposes?
Yeah, but yes. I mean, but it's, you don't get to deduct the gift. So there's no tax purposes.
Oh, so you can tell
at
your
the end
kid,
of
really,
your life.
No, that doesn't mean anything?
No. If I gave you $18,000,
yeah,
just you, between us, because you're such a great guy, and thanks for having me on the air, that would not be income to you, nor would it be a deduction.
No,
to
that
me.
Would be payola. But keep going.
Yes, right. But the point is, you can give anybody up to $18,000, and over that, there's an impact on your unified estate and gift tax. But since the estate tax starts around $18 million now, we'll see how that goes. There's no tax implication on gifts, basically.
And most people don't even get charitable deductions anymore because the standard deduction is higher, right?
Exactly. I mean, there are at some points where it might pay to itemize. If you're, and I just wrote a column about that, there's a way to avoid, as we talked about, I think we talked about it last week, if you take your required minimum distribution directly from your, or any contribution directly from your IRA and direct it to a charity through your custodian, you'd have to do that literally in the next 2 days because of the paperwork takes a while. But if you decide to give the Cancer Society $5,000 directly from your IRA, that will go without being taxed, and it would count up as your part of your required minimum distribution.
Yeah, some folks have questions like that. Terry, I've had UHC, United Healthcare, Medicare Advantage for 6 years and had cancer and surgeries and was never denied care for anything. This is a happy Advantage customer.
Good. I'm good. I mean, I think the trend is otherwise in the future, but I'm sorry for your illnesses and absolutely delighted to hear that you got all the care you thought you wanted and needed and were never turned down or delayed. That's great. It started out to be great. It really did. Until, if you'll look at some of my columns, I think it was in January, I believe it was Humana, reported a horrible drop in earnings attributed to the fact that their costs of providing care under their Advantage programs was higher than they had predicted. It squeezed profits and the stock fell. So, as I said back then, January, this earlier this year, February, when I wrote that column, what's that mean? It means they're going to be doubly looking at the cost of care they provide under these programs.
Terry, please ask Terry if she thinks a HELOC is a good insurance policy if my mortgage is paid off.
Well, a home equity line of credit, you can sign up for it. You might pay a fee. You won't be paying interest on that money until you withdraw it to use it. And the question is why you want to use your house as a piggy bank when your mortgage is paid off. I could think of a lot of other ways to try and get money. If it's temporary, put it on a credit card. The rates are high, but you'll pay it off. Your house is your piggy bank as a last resort.
Okay, but let me ask you this, Terry. There's no reason not to have a HELOC. If you have $300,000 in equity and a paid-off mortgage, then you should absolutely have a line of credit attached to that, right?
No, not absolutely. It depends on the fee you pay to get that every year.
Well, I would imagine it'd be a couple $100 a year, maybe, but I don't think it would be enough to keep you from accessing that money. You would like to have that line of credit available, wouldn't you?
But if you're still a good credit risk, you would get it when you need it.
I guess so. So don't have it. Don't.
I mean,
get
I just
it
wouldn't pay.
You need it.
Most home equity lines of credit have a significant annual fee that's standby. Okay, and don't forget that that also is in your credit report if you have that. So that becomes available credit, could have other impacts too.
Well, let me. I'll just suggest this. I'm getting out over my skis here, but when David Hochberg was on earlier this week, he said that a line of credit insulates you from possible lawsuits. If somebody slips on your property and they see that you've got $300,000 of equity in a home that isn't attached to a line of credit, you are more likely to get sued for that $300,000 equity you have in your house. But if it's a line of credit, then the bank is in the way, and that's a buffer. He said that attorneys in real estate recommend this to him or his clients for that very purpose. I never heard of such a thing.
I'll tell you what, I'm never going to argue with David Hochberg on that score, but I think probably if you find yourself worried about that kind of a thing, you would probably want an umbrella liability policy attached to your homeowners. Okay, and those come by the millions, and they're very relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You can have a $2 or $3 or $5 million umbrella liability policy. It won't protect you against, you need an errors and omissions policy if you were a professional. So it won't protect you again if you make if you're a doctor, you need malpractice insurance, for example. But it will protect you if someone slips or there's an auto accident of them going after your home. And it's a clearer, simpler way to protect yourself against liability that could go against your assets is to have an umbrella liability policy. Just, you know, if you're with Allstate or State Farm or whoever, just tell them, wait, you know what? Here's my $600,000 limitation. That might not be enough. What I'd really like to have is another $3 million umbrella liability. That's relatively inexpensive.
312-981-7200 with Terry Savage. Other questions include, I will turn 65 next May. When must I apply for Medicare, Parts A and B? Somebody else said, I read an article today that said I should open a 10,000 long-term CD for 2025. So should I? Terry will answer these and your questions, too, in just a few minutes. 312-981-7200 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deerfield-based Walgreens is reportedly in talks to sell itself to a private equity firm. The move could take the company private, and analysts say it could lead to a sell-off of pieces of Walgreens. The company's in talks with Sycamore Partners about a possible deal, which could be completed early next year, according to the Wall Street Journal. The New York-based equity firm specializes in retail and consumer investments. If the deal goes through, it would end local control of the century-old Chicago business. Charles Walgreens Sr. bought the drugstore where he worked as a pharmacist and turned it into an iconic local brand. The owner of chocolate maker Hershey has rejected a buyout offer from Chicago snack company Mondelez. The preliminary offer was reportedly too low. The rejection likely ends the pursuit of Hershey by Mondelez. The acquisition would have created a food giant with combined sales of nearly $50 billion. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And nearly 2 years ago, we told you about a Chicago company that was making seafood without fish.
Yeah, so the texture and the flavor are nearly identical to the real thing.
That is Ann Palermo, one of the co-founders of Aquacultured Foods. And on the phone with me now is...
I'm Brittany Chibi, the co-founder and CEO of Aquacultured Foods.
And in their West Loop facility, they've been growing tuna and scallops and other seafood using fermentation.
So the process is similar to how you would brew beer or make wine, actually.
How the business is going now, and it's going swimmingly, I guess you could say, after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, 4 years ago this month is when Aquacultured Foods started in a home kitchen, and now in their West Loop facility.
Gosh, we did 700 pounds of product last quarter, and we're scaling up right now to be producing 500 pounds of product a month.
With an eventual capacity of 75,000 pounds a year. 2 years ago, Aquacultured was handing out samples of its tuna, scallops, and other products, but now...
We launched with Chef Marcos Campos with his restaurant in Wicker Park called Mama Delia. And he replaced conventional tuna on his menu with the aqua tuna. And what's so cool about that too is that according to him and his team, it's selling even better than the traditional tuna dish.
Other chefs are taking notice.
Aqua product provides this great product consistency and quality and a stable price point that you can't get from traditional tuna or other seafood cuts.
They've got patents on the process with others pending. So, Brittany, I'm thinking that someone is going to come along and offer you billions of dollars to buy your company.
I would love that.
And if you want to try Chicago-made tuna without the environmental concerns of mercury and pesticides and overfishing, you can go to Mama Delia in Wicker Park.
So it's on Division Street, just west of Ashland.
There's pasta on the food calendar today. It's National Noodle Ring Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
The Money Lady, Terry Savage. Terry, can you answer some of those questions I put to you before the break?
Yeah, one was about Medicare sign-up.
Yeah.
What, was there anything more specific? Is that person retiring, covered, still at work?
If you're able to, well, there's a couple along these lines. One was, let me just start with this one. Terry, if you're able to stay on your spouse's employer health care after 65, if you're allowed by their employer to stay on, does that impact your ability to get a supplemental plan when they retire and we have to get
you'll
medical
have,
plans?
Okay. First of all, if you're retired and you have no health care insurance or will have no health insurance and you're retiring at your 65th birthday, let's say, in that case, you have an initial enrollment period. Starts 3 months before the month you turn 65 and end 3 months after the month you turn 65. So it's a 7 month period. But if you're not covered, you want to make sure you sign up in the month before your 65th birthday, and Medicare will start the month of your 65th birthday. If you wait till your birth month, you have to wait another month so you could be uncovered there. When you do sign up for Medicare, that's when you sign up for your supplement. You must do that. You can get the best plan, Plan G, and you, even if you have health issues, you cannot be turned down. And you'll sign up for Part D, the drugs, even although you take only Tylenol. Now, and if you're covered by your spouse's insurance and then he or she retires, that starts a new, that's the change that starts a new initial enrollment period for you. So you want to plan to sign up the month before your spouse retires, because that will, your trigger period will be that date where he or she loses coverage. You want to make sure you're covered. And yes, you can then get immediately the best supplement, because that's the a trigger for a new initial enrollment period.
Terry,
or if you're working, same thing.
I read an
article the month before you retire.
Pardon me. I read an article today that said I should open a 10,000 long-term CD for 2025. I presume they mean $10,000 long-term CD for 2025.
Well, there's a just quickly, there's a general sense that the Fed will keep cutting and interest rates will come down. And right now you can get about 4.25%, a little more than that, in a 6 month T-bill. That's the least you should be getting in a short term CD, around 4%. And if you have some money that you know you won't use for a couple of years, you might want to lock up 2 years or 3 years. I wouldn't lock up much longer than that, because who knows what will happen with rates.
One more quick question. What was Terry like growing up? Was she interested in economics? Were you on the equestrian team at high school? What was it like? What were you like growing up? In 45 seconds, go.
Get me late night with a glass of wine. I lead two lives. Here I am, the purveyor of financial wisdom. And yeah, I was always interested and fascinated, primarily because I didn't think we had enough of it. So I was fascinated by the opportunities, and started my job as a secretary in a brokerage firm on my way to graduate school and got hooked. But the other side of me, which very few people know, is I always have had horses. I love horses, and now I'm mostly devoted to rescuing horses from the slaughter pipeline. So Colby's Crew is my favorite charity, and I contribute a lot to them. So horses are definitely not a smart investment move, but they're cheaper than a psychiatrist, I always say.
Were you the psychiatrist must cost a lot. Were you the valedictorian of your high school class?
No, I wasn't valedictorian, but I always got, you know, great grades. And if you had asked my father, someone interviewed me once a long time ago, and they said, would your father say about you? He'd say, I never could take no for an answer, which makes me so aggressive now, not for myself, but on behalf of the people who post on terrysavage.com on the blog.
You're fearless problems. For your readers.
Exactly. I wouldn't do that for myself. Once in a while, I get riled up about how someone treats me. But basically, I will go to bat for people who are being misused, abused, or lost in the system. And that's what keeps me going these days.
Time's up. That's Terry Savage, friend of our listeners, her readers, and horses everywhere. We'll talk next week, Terry.
Thanks, John. Absolutely.